Okay, this would be question number eight. Question number eight. Let me just look back at the levels here. Yeah, they look okay. Question eight. Watching Book Wars, I was struck by its revelatory effect, a display of many individual relationships with books and their varied meanings and importance. People feeding from the art buffet while struggling through existence. Even the somewhat annoying browsers who stand reading for extended periods tells us something. Most of all, I was genuinely disturbed to witness the effects of then New York City Mayor Rudolph Giuliani's so-called quality of life campaign, which hit me as anti-art and fascist. A lust to kick out informal, unregistered entrepreneurs and other individuals. Just have the cops yank them out. Did any of the booksellers push back beyond cursing and having their books confiscated? If so, were you warned by the police against filming? So that's a multi-tiered question. I wouldn't say it was a lust to kick out. Well, or was it? No, it wasn't a lust. Was it a lust? It was more like a, how would you call it? A blanket mentality. What's the word for it? Were you anyone who is, yes, as you say, unregistered must go by definition. It was more like robotic. It was more like a lack of differentiation. In other words, hot dog sellers who had their cart with the license clearly plastered on the front, they were immune. And so on. Yet it started with, as everyone knows, legendarily, the squeegee guys, the guys who would stand at stoplights, and when you stopped there, they would run up and squeegee off your car windshield. Instead of just begging, they would squeegee it off, cleaning it in order to get, instead of just panhandling. And it's true, sometimes the squeegee juice was dirty and dirtied up the windshield more than it otherwise would have been, but on the other hand, they were trying, some of them were trying. On the other hand, some of them were just doing it in a token way. On the other hand, some of them were doing an actual good job. So it was really a gray area thing. And there's a lot of literature and studies about the quality of life campaign, the nuts and bolts aspects, the below the line aspects of it. That was beyond the scope of this movie, insofar especially as I wanted it to be experiential. This is what we experienced as we experienced it. As mentioned in the movie, Sixth Avenue guys, they were hit harder, I think because they looked more ragtag in some ways. You know, so it's about aesthetics. Not that that should matter. And I'm not even talking about race issues. I'm not talking about color of skin necessarily. I'm talking about guys on Sixth Avenue they were, just by the nature of their business model, they were often run and gun. They would set up quickly, put out the magazines, sell them, or books, and they weren't provisioned necessarily or by their business model to gussy up their tables to make them look like fancy little bookstalls, as some of us did on West 4th, not all, or on 3rd Avenue. Basically, you know, I would throw a nice looking bed sheet, like a with a pattern on it, like a maroon bed sheet. That was my thing that I had, with polka dots on it, black polka dots, over the table, and it would drape over the front, and it would give it the extra veneer of aesthetic responsibility. And I don't know if that makes a difference or not. But anyway, it came quickly, and it was aligned in, at least on West 4th Street, it was aligned with the university working in the vicinity, who they have real estate holdings, and they have some arguable interest in making the place look campus-like. But the thing they forget is that it's not a campus. These are city streets. So they've run smack dab into a conflict of interest right there. So you can imagine if they own the outright campus, the hypothetical campus, then of course it makes sense that they have a right to ask people not to set up there. But you can't necessarily strong arm people into not setting up on a public city street. It's not kosher. It's not bona fide behavior. But as we know in life, might often makes right. And they would call the police, bring them out there to hassle us. And that went on for a while. There was a time, it actually became significant, when they put planters down, these massive planters strategically placed just far apart enough so you couldn't set up a table. They also would spray paint these lines, arcane little lines that would change. You know, sometimes it was just a dot or a little thing, and you couldn't quite figure out what it was. And that was on West 4th. On 3rd Avenue, where I sometimes set up, police came by without warning, and they would kind of poke around, and it was not, there was no methodology over there that I could discern. Usually they were friendly and went away. As you can see in the movie, they made Polish Joe nervous. That's where Polish Joe tended to set up, on 3rd Avenue by, like, I think 11th Street. On 6th Avenue, it was another story, like I said, and partly because I think of their business model. Some would say, well, why did they choose this business model? And the counterpoint to that would be, well, that was the business model available to them, that you, if you have no other option, as many guys are starting up over there, you know, in a run-and-gun fashion, you don't necessarily have a sophisticated storage infrastructure and vehicles and so forth, so it's going to look more run-and-gun. And that, I say run-and-gun, more improvised. But even so, they were often very clean setups, you know, with the milk crates full of the books stacked neatly under the tables. There wasn't shit strewn across the sidewalk. Neat tables. I could see the guys took care of their items over there. So I think it was closer to the heart of the 6th Precinct, 6th Avenue. So that was closer to the epicenter, and probably closer, farther away from educated liberals that you might find on Astor Place or West 4th Street or 3rd Avenue, who might object or speak up. Over there, it was heavy pedestrian traffic, commercial traffic, and people passing by, not really hanging out, but passing by, picking up a magazine and going. So there wasn't like a static, as far as I could discern, a static liberal environment nearby to provide eyeballs to what was going on. Did any of the booksellers push back? Physically? Not really, but you can hear. Generally, the booksellers would not push back because, number one, it was kind of pointless. You would go and, you know, go through the motions to try to get your book supply back. I had my books confiscated only one time. But you go through the motions to go, you know, get your stuff out of the storage, the police storage. So you don't want to make waves where they could. In that environment, you're very vulnerable, and you know your shit could mysteriously, quote unquote, go missing, and that's your livelihood. It goes missing on the way from the place where it was confiscated to the holding area. But what you hear a lot of, and you hear this in Book Wars, you hear a lot of the friends of the booksellers, the proxies, the friends, really fucking bitching at these guys. No violence, as far as I could discern, and there was, well, on West 4th, an effort to organize. There were petitions made to the community board and so forth. To answer your question, the last part, if so, was I warned by the police against filming? I wasn't warned in general. I was warned during specific incidents, like that one incident on 6th Avenue, which you can see in Book Wars, but you don't see the head of the shot, which is edited out because it dragged on. I don't know why. It's in the B-roll archive. One of the officers there said, "Hey, mister, he was talking to me, looking at me. He obviously wanted me to stop shooting." And you could hear the guy, the friend of Grady. Grady's the nickname of the guy who was busted and when he wheeled his books away in Book Wars. You can hear Grady's colleague, his friend, who had been already giving some shit to the officers. You can hear him say, "Hey, he can film if he wants. It's a free society." Something like that. I have to look at the B-roll again. But he did. And it is. I am free to shoot in the public space. So I just kept shooting them when they were taking the books, whenever I saw that. I think I saw them. You know, the more I go into this and answer the questions, more memories come back. And there were a couple episodes, a couple incidents where I went by during the peak of my shooting. I guess I was known as the guy with the camera, and they knew I was a bookseller too. That's the thing, but in a different neighborhood. Even so, I could see there at times the cops gathered as if assembling, as if to do something, and then I showed up with the camera, not even rolling, not up on my shoulder, but just hanging. I had like a sling for it around my shoulder. And they could see me and the camera, and they would kind of dissemble and murmur and hang out and then just dissipate. That happened a couple times. And that was before, that was in, well, shooting-wise, 1998 or 1999, before smartphones were ubiquitous, which is the sort of thing that would happen now. I mean, now they would pay mind to the bookseller themselves or a proxy or friend of the bookseller video, making a video about them on their smartphone. But back then, the smartphones, no. I don't even think there were smartphones. So it was, you know, mobile shooting. And when the camera guy showed up, it did change the dynamic. That's the end of question 8. I hope that was sufficient.